You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Today, we're in Culoz.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
Hello, Lionel. And we're going to be joined by somebody else in a moment or two. But first of all, Lionel, give us a tale of the attack.
I will indeed, yeah. We're in Culoz in the Jura today.
Oh, I meant to say, where are we, Lionel?
This is where we are. We're outside.
By the bins again?
By the bins again.
Christian Prudhomme laughing at that.
Christian Prudhomme's taken the final table. Be a bit rude to kick him off, wouldn't it?
We need to speak to Christian Prudhomme, Prudy, friend of the podcast, at some point.
The next few days,
got lots of questions to ask him, so we're waiting in the queue for a little interview with him.
Indeed. Well, stage 15 from Bourg-en-Bresse to Culoz, 160 kilometres with six climbs in the Jura, finishing with the Grand Colombier and the spectacular Lacet du Grand Colombier. The attack started on the first climb, though, with Rafał Majka and Ilnur Zakarin kicking things off. After several counterattacks, a very powerful group of 30 got away. It included some really big names: Vincenzo Nibali, Domenico Pozzovivo, Jaimar Zubeldia, Jarlinson Pantano, Pierre Rolland, Serge Pauwels, Tom Dumoulin, Thomas Vogler, Julian Alaphilippe among them. It all split up and riders were going back and forth all day. There was a period where Nibali was off the front on his own and was looking good, but that was short-lived. And then the real action was all in the last 50 kilometres. On the Grand Colombier, Majka and Zakarin got away and they were joined by Jarlinson Pantano and Alaphilippe. Zakarin was dropped on the descent, perhaps not a surprise considering he had a very bad crash on the Col d'Aniel during the Giro d'Italia. At one point, Pantano and Majka went clear and they were working really well together and they tackled the final loop. Majka then dropped Pantano and Pantano fought back on the Lacet du Grand Colombier. And on the descent, Majka was on his own, but he ran off the road, which cost him some time and allowed a flying Pantano to catch up. So those two came to the final kilometre together. And really, the Polish champion, Majka, looked like he'd done everything right because he'd manoeuvred Pantano to the front. He looked like he was going to win the sprint, but then Pantano found the strength to come back past and take I Am Cycling's first stage win of the race. It was all a little bit tame in the yellow jersey group, really, partly because of Astana's bizarre tactics, and we'll ask our guest this evening about that, and also Sky's strength. Fabio Aru did try something but got nowhere. Roman Bardet went very hard towards the top of the final climb, but was reeled in. So overall, no change. Froome still in yellow ahead of Mollema and Adam Yates. Peter Sagan is in green. Rafał Majka is back in the polka dot jersey as King of the Mountains for the first time since the Pyrenees. Adam Yates is still in white. And tomorrow we head into Switzerland with a stage finish in Bern.
And just before I introduce our guest, did Zakarin crash today? Did he come off the road at one point?
I don't think he did. There were several riders who did. Julian Alaphilippe.
Several did. Julian Alaphilippe did, certainly. Yeah. Here's our special guest tonight. It is, much popular demand. You know, he was a regular at the Giro d'Italia. He's been a regular on the podcast for several years. What a build up this is. It's, of course, Ciro Scognamiglio.
Ciao, listeners. Thanks, God, to be here. And I heard a key word from Lionel some few seconds ago, Switzerland. Yes, we are going to Switzerland, listeners. And I would like to say one thing about Switzerland. Is it possible? Listeners, Switzerland is marvelous. I mean, nice people, beautiful landscapes, good chocolate, good cheese, but...
Nice tax arrangements.
I'm not interested in this, but certainly yes. But it's really a big problem, this country, listeners, you know? It's a country without any direct access to the sea. So I would like, certainly, Richard, you spoke before about Christian Prudhomme, for example. He is really a friend of our podcast. But, Christian, I would like to ask you, it's up to go to a country for the Tour de France without access to the sea?
It's right. It's just over there.
Correct.
Just over there, Ciro. Go and ask him yourself.
But loads of lovely lakes, though, Ciro. Some of them have beaches. Do they not count?
Lionel, good question, but I have a clear answer also for this. I don't like really much lakes.
Okay.
Yes, I can understand. People say, okay, lakes are beautiful. But for me, Lionel, lakes are not more than big swimming pool. Yes, this is my idea, listeners. Excellent. I don't want to say that it's correct, okay, but it's my idea.
Did you watch any cycling today, yeah, Chiro? There was a stage of the Tour de France, and your man, Vincenzo Nibali, he was there. He's still in the race. Didn't realize he was still riding.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying to reach the best condition for Rio. It's clear. I have to say that for the moment, he's not really very satisfied with this race so far, because he tried to enter in a breakaway, especially for the third time in his tour. He tried to enter in a breakaway, but as you can see, it's not able to arrive to the finish line under to fight for the victory. So I think now he's far from his best condition. Certainly his goal is the Olympics, more or less 3 weeks to come from here, but he's not at the best now.
He's not, is he? Because he's normally very good at finishing off these moves. We saw him at the Tour last year, which was disappointing for him from an overall point of view, but he did salvage it a bit with a fantastic stage win. And he's normally very good, and he's been in a few groups like that now, and he's not quite delivered, has he?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, also, his season has been a little bit, I don't want to say complicated, but I mean, it was very competitive already in February when he won the Tour of Oman. Then he prepared for the Giro, and at the end he was able to win it. And now, trying to reach the third peak of the form for August, I mean, after a Giro really hard and the Tour like this, maybe it's not easy.
So Lionel mentioned that it was a bit of a tame old battle for in the group behind the breakaway. It was a big breakaway, but in the Chris Froome overall contenders group, this was potentially a banana skin for Chris Froome. It's quite a similar stage to 2012, the day after the Planche des Belles Filles, where Bradley Wiggins took the yellow jersey. Chris Froome won the stage. Bradley Wiggins took the yellow jersey. It was a very tough day.
Pontarlier, was it?
It was Thibaut Pinot won the stage. Won, yeah. It went into Switzerland that day. It was the day of Bradley Wiggins' little rant in his press conference.
Yeah.
Very worth looking up for a full transcript of that. Anyway, Bradley Wiggins later said was the hardest day of the tour. And today was a really tough up and down day, 4,000 metres of climbing. And not an awful lot happened. Now, two questions, I suppose. Are Froome's rivals saving it all for the Alps, or have they conceded defeat? I spoke to Heimar Zubeldia, Bauke Mollema's Trek Segafredo teammate. We'll hear from him in a moment or two. But his director, Kim Anderson, pretty much admitted that the podium would be a fantastic result for Mollema. And, you know, does he risk trying to unseat Froome, or does he ride as conservatively, defensively as he can to try and hold on for a podium?
Well, I think the answer to that is obvious. If he can finish second in the Tour, that could be a lifetime's best result for him. And that's the problem that always comes up, isn't it, in the final week, when everyone starts looking at how far there is to go to Paris, and the opportunities may well be there in the Alps, but the risk of losing places, that's the big problem. I mean, Mollema, by risking something, he could have a bad day and then lose 3-4 minutes and tumble down the top 10, and then suddenly the Tour doesn't look as good for him. And so everybody's just settled into into their position, and really, barring kind of disasters, I can see them all riding around the Alps and finishing in Paris in roughly this order.
Chiro, stop posing for photographs. We've been joined actually here by Nick Christian, who helps out the podcast. Hello, Nick.
Evening.
Nick's out for a few days watching the Tour, and you're taking some photographs. That's very nice. Chiro, I mentioned the lack of attacks in that group, but Fabio Aru did have a little go.
Yes, I mean, I think that normally in the third week, Fabio became stronger than the others, and I had the impression that he's becoming better and better. I think not for the yellow jersey, I want to be clear. I mean, it will be almost impossible for him. But searching maybe to go closer to the podium, the third, fifth place, something like that, could be a thinkable goal for him.
A sort of a la Zubeldia ride. And I did speak to Heimar Zubeldia at the finish. He is a teammate of Bauke Mollema. I think he's set to be a very important teammate. He was in the breakaway today as well. And I suppose the question I had for him was he in the breakaway try and win the stage, or potentially to help Mollema later in the stage, which he did. So here is the Basque rider, Jaimar Zubeldia. Jaimar, that was a big day out you had today, and then you were at the front there helping Bauke in the closing kilometres. Was there a part of a plan to help Bauke later in the stage with you up the road today, or were you going for a stage win today?
Of course, we have both goals, you know. First, see if you can fight for the stage, but in the first pass of the Colombia, I see I don't have the legs, and I was calculating to pass the last pass of Colombia to wait to the group, because I was always for the radio with information. I know Brian Garden drop, and I just wait in the button, no? I give a bottle to Bauke, and I pull full gas, no? To make a bigger gap in the, between Brian Garden.
I presume that's going to be your priority the final week, to help Bauke.
Of course, it's part of my job, no? I'm here to stay close to Bauke, especially in the mountains. And the last week is everything in the mountains, and I need to stay close to him.
How impressed have you been with how he's been riding and where he's placed now?
For me, it's not very anything new, no? I know Bauke is really professional. He's, in the shape of his life. And for a lot of things, no? Because he's 30 years old now, have experience in the race. He don't have any problem during the season. He prepared everything good this tour, and I think he have the opportunity behind him, you know.
And he's matched Chris Froome so far. I mean, everything's gone right for him. You're talking about the podium, but is a win possible for him?
It's difficult, no, because you know, Froome is the first of the contenders. Have a big team also, but you never know, no. Until the end, you need to fight, and we'll see what happens.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
And now, Pedaleur de Charme.
Thank you to Eurosport for sponsoring the cycling podcast and the Pedaleur de Charme award. I managed to see Alex Howes this morning, give him his t-shirt after Kelly Fretz's lobbying on his behalf.
Hotly contested that was, Rich.
Yeah, so very handed over the jersey, the coveted Pedaleur de Charme jersey to Alex Howes. A little reminder, by the way, that these t-shirts are all available for sale on our website. We've given them a single plug this tour, but
wow, been very slack, haven't we, on the old commercial front.
Look at that eyebrow raising. TheCyclingPodcast.com, if you go to our online shop, there's a whole range of t-shirts, including some with a bit of a Chiro theme. There's the classic Scogni Emilio t-shirt. Mm. It's great.
Scogni Emilio, the brand. I mean, amazing.
We were very touched as well today to be sent a clip from the London Palladium last night. Hadley Fraser, the singer, artist, who is a friend of the podcast, a correspondent on Twitter sometimes of the podcast. Hadley Fraser appeared at the London Palladium singing, wearing a Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt last night. And it was a nice tribute to the victims of the Nice terrorist attack, and very nicely done. And it's a beautiful song. And we posted that on Twitter earlier today. So thank you, Hadley, for that. If you're listening, I'm sure you are. So anyway, I did give Alex Howes the t-shirt. Here's how Alex Howes reacted to that. Alex, a proud moment?
The proudest of moments. Yeah,
peak, perhaps peak of your career. Where does it, you know, where do you go from here?
Yeah, I think it's all downhill from here.
It's 4,000 meters of climbing today.
Oh man, don't say that.
So Alex Howes there, sounding quite underwhelmed, but I think secretly he was burning with pride. Who's today's Pedaleur de Charme? I mean, Jaimar Zubeldia was a possibility. Any thoughts, Chiro? Did anyone today catch your eye?
You told Jaimar Zubeldia, in my opinion, it's a good choice. Also, Ilnur Zakarin maybe could be a good one or not?
Well, Zakarin was a winner, of course, at the Giro of Pedaleur de Charme. Not that that would exclude him, but I think it's going to be somebody who got a lot of nominations, the most, Julian Alaphilippe. Okay. Dan McClay got a few as well, actually, today. Battled in, last
he came
man.
In, yeah, he came in inside the time limit, last man, off the back on his own. Just before we move on to this, talking about the stage win, Chiro, while you're here, can you explain what Astana were trying to do on the Lacet du Grand Colombier? I mean, they were riding very hard to try and set up Aru for that attack, but when Aru made his move, it didn't last very long, and it looked like a lot of effort for not very much reward.
No, it's true. Maybe I'm convinced that Aru was trying to have a kind of helpers in the breakaway. I mean, because, well, alone, I think he already knew that alone was possibility for the success of this action. Maybe he hoped to try other helpers as Bardet, maybe Valverde, but at the end, Aru told me before after the stage that the rhythm of Team Sky was simply too strong, and so he preferred not to do more effort in order to save energy for the third week.
Yeah, I mean, the strength of Team Sky was really apparent today, wasn't it, Rich? I was having a chat with Charlie Wagelius, the Cannondale sports director, at the finish, and his reaction was, wow, how strong a Sky, because we knew that Wout Poels would come to the fore in this final week. We knew that Sergio Henao would be really important for Chris Froome in all of the mountain ranges, but they look like they've got everything completely under control. I mean, there's no real cracks in their armour, is there?
Well, did we expect there to be? I mean, if you look at the riders they've caught, they're just some of the best riders in the world, and they're all focused on this one objective, and it's to protect Chris Froome. And when you've got Wout Poels on the front, and he's won Liège-Bastogne-Liège, let's not forget. He's an extremely good rider. He won here in the Tour de Laine a couple of years as well, earlier in his career. He's always a very, 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 very talented bike rider who had a couple of years not performing quite at that level after a terrible crash. The Tour de France in Metz in 2000. I've got this wrong before, but it was 2012 actually.
And also Mikel Nieve, who is the sort of rider who would be off hunting stage wins on a day like this, and probably coming up with a fair bit of success. You know, he wins stages of Grand Tours. He's pretty reliable, and he's reduced to kind of middle of the order, isn't he? I
mean, was he not fifth overall in the Tour de France in 2013?
Well,
something like that.
Quite.
So
I mean,
you know, these guys are top rank riders, and they are riding for, you know, they're in a subservient position to Chris Froome, and that sort of firepower, no other team has that. You know, Valverde went off the front for to maybe to help Quintana today, maybe to help himself, who knows, but there's just not the same, well, there's not the same strength, there's not the same unity in other teams. I mean, we've said it before, but Sky have, you know, hoovered up the best talent for this sort of, job.
And isn't the great kind of triumph of their management persuading riders of that ability to commit to somebody else's individual success? And they've obviously picked people who are prepared to commit fully to that goal. And you look at the other teams and you wonder. I mean, Aru and Nibali are not working as a partnership for any particular goal, it doesn't look like to me. Valverde and Quintana don't look like they're even riding in tandem.
I mean, the guy who will have a United team behind him, I think, is Mollema at Trek. A pretty strong team. Cancellara will certainly fancy winning into Bern, his hometown, on Monday. But otherwise, he's a strong guy to have helping him. Zubeldi, a strong guy in the mountains to help him. Frank Schleck as well. Not a bad team, and they certainly will be, you know, they've not got anything else to ride for. They'll be riding for Mollema.
I agree completely. So we have the impression that Team Sky is the strongest team so far in this tour, but we can't say me, you, Richard, and you, Lionel. We can be considered, is my question, the Team Sky of the podcasts. Because after us, we are pioneers, so after us, there are, I see, a lot of other podcasts around the Tour de France. But listeners, I can assure you that we are the best podcast for sure, but not only for the present. I say this also for the future. We'll remain
very optimistic.
The future.
I think you're saying that mainly, Giro, on his off.
He's off.
You're saying that mainly because one of our rival podcasts is just recording at the table next to us over there, and I think they could possibly hear that.
Oh, yeah. Have they poached one of our guests, or is Seb Piquet just enjoying a glass of wine there? No, I think he's just enjoying some wine.
I hope
it's
so,
okay.
Yeah.
It's
that's
okay.
The BBC bespoke one. We both featured in Miranda Sawyer's radio review in the Observer today,
which
was a huge honour. Probably our finest hour.
Just on, before we move on to Pantano and the stage win, just on the overall battle, is it a battle, really? I mean, I was looking back at the most recent Tour de France, and not since 2011 has the yellow jersey changed hands in the third week. You know, that was the year Cadel Evans won. Thomas Vokler was holding the yellow jersey almost all the way to Paris. Andy Schleck, I think, had it for one day, and then Cadel Evans took it over on the last mountain stage, if I'm not wrong. But then 2012, Bradley Wiggins took
I think
jersey.
Cadel Evans took over in the time trial the day after the last mountain stage. Andy Schleck took it at the Galibier.
Right. Yes,
and the next day in Grenoble, Cadel Evans took
the
jersey.
That's right. So Evans won the tour in that time trial. 2012, Bradley Wiggins took the yellow jersey on the first Saturday, the second Saturday, the first mountain stage at La Planche des Belfis, and then defended it for 2 weeks. 2013, Chris Froome took the yellow jersey. Did the same thing the first mountain weekend. Vincenzo Nibali, although it was the following Tuesday, it was the first proper mountain stage that he got the yellow jersey, defended it all the way. And then last year, Chris Froome again defended the yellow jersey for almost 2 weeks, and it's looking very much like that's going to happen again, despite the fact that the tour organisers in all of those years have tried to sort of backload the course, either with time trials like in 2012 or with very late mountain stages. And bear in mind, we've got some really tough mountain stages still to come in the Alps. All those backloaded stages, they're not really deciding the race, are they? It's all getting done and dusted early on.
Well, there came close to being upset last year. Who knows? Let's not give up on the race entirely.
I'm not giving up on the race, Rich. I'm trying to get into the spirit of
Team
predicting.
Team Sky are formidably strong, strangling the life out of the race, perhaps. But they are nothing without their leader, without Froome. So Froome still needs for nothing to go wrong. And as we've seen already, things can go wrong. Crashes can happen. Incidents can occur. You know, without that leader, Team Sky are nothing. And none of those riders are placed, you know, none of them are in a position to win or to do anything. So they're entirely dependent on Chris Froome. Cut off the head and it's, game over for Team
all
Sky.
All the eggs in Chris Froome's basket.
Well,
I mean, how
he's
riding the Tour de France with a basket of eggs, I just don't know.
Hang on. What's that noise?
Good evening, chaps, from deep in the Jura Mountains, not the Alps. Hope you got that right today. I've been droning on, as I always do, about these things on Twitter all day. We're in the Jura, not the Alps. Lionel, I'm also still reeling from having to pay 35 euros for a plate of chicken in Bourg-en-Bresse last night, as good as it was. 35 euros was as steep as anything on this year's tour route. Today's stage, I thought we'd see a little bit more GC action. We saw a bit of an attack from Romain Bardet near the end. He was my hot tip to win the race today, win the stage today. But in order for him to do that, AG2R would have had to really ride hard on the front all day to reel a break back. Or put a couple of guys in the break to then drop back to Bardet later in the stage. Didn't happen. The break stuck. Pretty disappointed with Vincenzo Nibali today. I thought he had a great chance, particularly when he got into the break. He attacked off the Grand Colombier descent, you might remember, in 2012. It was actually a different side of the Grand Colombier, but in the 2012 Tour de France, yeah, Nibali was on the attack there. Thought we might see something similar today. He kind of fizzled and dissolved into a turquoise puddle. Not too far up the Grand Colombier, I think, the first time up. Anyway, the main story, I suppose, on the GC was TJ Van Garderen and losing time. Doesn't particularly surprise me. I felt that he's been quite tense over the last few days, and the strain, the stress of this ongoing ambiguity about who is BMC's leader may, who knows, have got to him. I think now they really have to back Richie Porte. He has ridden immaculately apart from the second stage of Granville, where he lost just over a minute. He's not really missed a trick. Didn't do an especially good time trial, but in the mountains, certainly he's matched Chris Froome pedal stroke for pedal stroke. Talking of Froome, he attempted something akin to a drop of the shoulder, I put it to Malcolm Mollema. It was something like a Cruyff turn. I'm sorry about the football analogy. Mollema giggled, but I think he was completely baffled by me suggesting that that's what Froome had been doing. Anyway, Froome kind of dummied. He sort of made to attack, and then he put the gun back in the holster, so to speak. So no real attacks from Froome. We are as we were, really, on general classification. And again, Movistar didn't do an awful lot. They tried to ping Valverde down the road, but they're running out of of time. They're running out of road, as they did last year, of course. Anyway, that's, I think that's going to be all from me. Lionel, believe it or not, we're actually going back to Bourg-en-Bresse tonight, but I shall not be going back to the establishment where we shelled out a princely sum of €35 for a couple of chicken thighs last night. Anyway, chaps, hope you enjoy your evening, hope you enjoy your meal, hope you pay a bit less than last night, and we'll catch up in the next couple of days.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa. Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world. See rafa.cc for more information.
Thank you to Rafa, who are continuing to sponsor us in this Tour de France and beyond. Saw Daniel Freeb, we just heard from Daniel Freeb, the Free Boss file there. Thank you for that, Daniel. Saw Daniel today resplendent, head to toe in Rafa gear. Looked good. He looked great. Now, a bit of news about Balkan Mollema, who featured in our Kilometre Zero on books. He, I am told, I'm reliably informed, is currently reading a book called Giro d'Italia by Dino Buzzati. Do you know about this book?
A Dutch colleague
told me about it. It's published in 1997 in Italian. And apparently, he says it's the best book written about cycling. So I've ordered it already, actually.
Wow. I'll be waiting for you when you get home.
But Balkan Mollema, 5 days into the tour, had already read two books. We're going to try and get an update on that at some point this week, how many books he's read. But apparently that's the one he's on to now. He did tell us he doesn't read a lot of cycling books, but that's obviously making an exception for that one. Now, Lionel, there was a fantastic win today for a team that doesn't have long left. I am cycling.
Soon to be I'm not cycling. Oh, I feel bad about that, because they're a really nice bunch, aren't they?
You feel bad about that joke? They are a nice bunch, and we like them. Yeah, they were a breath of fresh air when they came along 4 or so years ago, and you know, they've struggled to get results. Although they haven't struggled to get results since they announced they were stopping.
Mm.
They won a stage at the Giro d'Italia the day after the announcement.
Roger Kluger.
Yeah, you're only saying it like that because Rob Hatch is just over there.
The pronunciation police are very close. I'm on my best behaviour.
I think his ear just twitched at that. Anyway, I did have a chat at the finish with Michel Tetaz, who is the owner of the team, the guy who set it up, a Swiss businessman. We're close to the border of Switzerland here, of course. First time I've spoken to him, but here is Michel Tetaz at the finish. A fantastic day for the team. Is this the best day that you've had with the team?
Well, yes, it's one of the best days. Don't forget, we had a win, a stage win on Vigiro, one on the Tour de Suisse, and 1 year today. I mean, this is something which has been prepared for a long time, and it just come to maturity now. So it's we are very happy, but I think it's we deserve it.
Well, the stage win at the Giro just came the day after it was announced to confirm that the team would unfortunately end at the end of the season.
Yeah.
It does seem to have been a rush of good results since that announcement.
Yeah, but no correlation. People would like to see something about, you know, we quit the environment and therefore riders are moving ahead. No, I think you cannot do that sort of thing. I mean, you have to prepare a lot of things in advance. And having been able to do so, we get the rewards, basically. And whether it would be one day before, one day after, shouldn't make any difference.
Is there any chance at all of the team continuing? There were some rumours of perhaps a new sponsor coming in. Is there any chance at all of that happening?
No, I don't think there is any chance. I said in May that basically this was the end of the story. We have been here for 4 years. We would have been happy having a kind of a miracle where a co-sponsor would join us and bring in some money. But this has not been the case. And I knew it would not be the case because it's certainly difficult these days due for different factors. So it's okay. We leave the stage for other guys.
Any regrets on a day like today in particular?
Oh, yes, you always regret, because what we've been living today has been fantastic in a way, because the people, the atmosphere. I hope some other team would invite me to in the next few years as a guest. But leading this as a general manager of a team is something you would dream of.
So you're not reflecting yet, because the team obviously carries on to the end of the season. But how do you think you will reflect on your time in cycling?
Oh, certainly I'm going to be around, and whether one way or the other, I don't know in which direction. This is something too early to tell, but we'll think about it. We'll sit back and we'll see what we can do.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we heard there from the Swiss owner of I Am Cycling. I just want to check I got the pronunciation right. Michel Tetaz.
Michel Tetaz.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks. Brilliant. That's Rob Hatch there. Excellent. Thank you for advising that. Thanks, Rob.
I'm going to record a rival show now. Bye-bye.
We've already been talking about that. Don't worry. Anyone who's listening who didn't know that there was a rival podcast, just pretend you didn't hear that.
Yeah. Anyway, let's not talk about other podcasts. Let's talk about the Tour de France.
Pantano.
That was a terrific win, wasn't it? I mean, talk about not giving up. I mean, he was distance on the climb, I think twice, certainly, that we saw on the TV. He fought his way back up to Micah, who looked to have it all under control. Not just on the uphill, but on the flat as well. It was on the downhill that he really had the trouble. It'd be really interesting to know whether Micah's little moment where he ran off the road on the right-hand side and onto the grass, that cost him obviously a few seconds. But the way Pantano went down the descent was, I mean, it really was breakneck stuff. And once they got back together, they worked together again. Pantano didn't kind of like do the bluff thing of sitting on the wheel and saying, oh no, I'm not coming through. He went through, did his turns. He even got lulled into the worst position, put on the front by Micah. Micah, I thought, played it perfectly, but just didn't have the legs. He got Pantano exactly where he needed him. When the sprint opened up, Micah came past, but then Pantano had this surge and was able to net the win. And it was interesting, Daniel made the point on Twitter about the Colombians, and we have this kind of romantic notion of them all being sort of flyweight climbers who dance off up the hills, because I think of Luis Herrera, really, in certainly in my mind, and perhaps Chepi Gonzalez. Luis Herrera was the great Colombian climber in the 80s who won the King of the Mountains jersey a couple of times. Chepi Gonzalez always used to attack in the mountains in the 90s. But a lot of the Colombian riders have been much more kind of diesel riders than that, and that's the point Daniel made. And when you think of Santiago Botero in the 2000s, Mejia is another one. Even Quintana, he hasn't got
the real punch.
He doesn't turn the gas on and put people in difficulty.
Interesting, Pantano, Joe Dombrowski, the event we did at the Rafa Cycle Club recently in London, Joe Dombrowski was in a couple of breaks with Pantano at the Giro and really hated riding with him. He said he just wouldn't ride consistently. When he went through, he'd go really hard, and it was very amusing the way that Joe told it. That will be available soon, the audio of that.
But isn't that part of the game of bluff, of being in a break? If you're in a break with two riders, with one other rider on a climb, you want to try and make your partner uncomfortable enough, but also ensure that they're going to keep working with you. I think the problem with today's stage, Rich, was that the climb, the Lacet du Grand Colombier, was pretty steep in more or less all the way up. And
no, I mean for Quintana to do anything in this tour, then Froome has to tire or dramatically, or his health deteriorate, or he has to fade dramatically in this final week. That's the only way that the race is going to spring open again for guys like him. Let's see what happens. We should finish it there, I think, Lionel, because we've got to get off to our hotel. Sorry.
We have. I just wanted to... it's Monday again tomorrow, isn't it? We've got a busy week coming up, the last week of the Tour de France. Monday, Kilometre Zero kicks off again in the morning. Rich, you've made the African Dream about the Quebec charity and Dimension Data team. Looking forward to listening to that. On Tuesday, I think we've got Kaylee Fretz, who knows all about bikes and how they work and how they're put together. I know they've got two wheels and a chain and some gears. And now I have a bike with electric gears on it, but I have no idea how they work. I always forget to charge them up. I'm clueless. So we roped in Kaylee to explain what all this furore is about disc brakes.
Disc brakes.
My opinion goes no further than thinking that they look really ugly. And so we wanted to get somebody who really understands what disc brakes are all about.
And he's spoken thoughts for other people.
We have indeed.
And on Wednesday, we've got an exclusive interview with the one and only Bernard Hinault. the Badger, at his last ever Tour de France.
Indeed, yeah. And also on Tuesday, though, Rich, is the second episode, I believe, of
the Cycling Podcast Femina. Yeah, so Tuesday's a day off, obviously. We'll be producing Kilometre Zero, but not the regular episodes. So if you want something to listen to on Tuesday, it's our monthly Cycling Podcast Femina, episode number 2. Got a special feature in there on Marianne Vos. It's myself and Orla Shinawi present it. And we've got a little report on the Giro Rosa and obviously the women's tour in Great Britain as well. And yeah, I think there's quite a lot of good stuff in that from what I can remember.
Yeah, and we'll be hopefully getting to Paris in time for La Course on Sunday,
well,
won't we?
It's hopefully about it.
It's not in the balance. I mean, we don't yet know how we're getting there. Are we driving? Are we taking the train? What's going on?
It's only Sunday, Lionel. Let's worry. Let's cross that bridge when we come to it. Just looking at
it'd be terrible to just plan ahead of it, wouldn't it?
Looking at Lanterne Rouge situation, Sam Bennett looks safely in Lanterne Rouge, position 183rd at the moment, 3 hours 26 behind. He's not going to be winning the Tour this year, is he?
No, he's not, but he will be featuring in our final Kilometre Zero on Friday. More details
pretty
about that in
the
week.
We mapped out the whole week there, apart from
brilliant,
Thursday,
isn't it?
Which is still a bit up in there.
It is. Look at that. I mean,
amazing.
This level of planning has never affected the cycling podcast before.
No, it hasn't. Well, listen, we should wrap things up. I think hopefully we're going to be joined by Seb Peakey tomorrow evening. He did promise us another appearance soon, so we'll be in Switzerland tomorrow evening. In the meantime, thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard. Have you got a plug adapter for Switzerland yet?
Of course not.